It may seem like Andrew Cuomo has had a charmed life so far as New York's governor. The first 2 years of his term have seen almost impossible-to-pass bills passed, deadlocks broken, and his poll numbers on the rise. But can that last forever? New York Magazine contributing editor Chris Smith explains why there may be trouble ahead in his cover piece for the current issue of his magazine. It's called The Albany Machiavelli, and I'm very delighted that Chris Smith could join us today. Hello.
Thanks for having me.
How many dealings have you had with Andrew Cuomo before you began working on this piece?
Oh, quite a few. You know, more frequently when he was attorney general, but even predating that a little bit when he ran and imploded trying to run for governor the first time. And, yeah, very much the past two and a half years.
I have found most politicians to be rather guarded when they're talking to the press. How forthcoming is he as a subject?
A lot and very little. He is, as I try to describe in the story, a master of working the phones. And it's a throwback talent in a lot of ways. And he will call you up at all hours of the day or night and just talk. And those are
about the things he wants you to know about.
Exactly. And those are often under very restrictive, off-the-record kinds of ground rules. And he's fascinating. He's hilarious. He's scheming. He's highly masterful at explaining his theory or his beliefs.
And why do you think he's calling you and telling you this if he says you can't publish it? Is he just using you as a sounding board, or do you think that ultimately he's assuming it's going to be used in some way?
It's definitely not as a sounding board, certainly with the media. It's a form of seduction. I mean, whether he's on the record or off, he's attempting to channel a story in the direction he wants it to go.
And he has certain people he does this with. You, when you said you get the call, you're not just talking about you alone.
Oh, no. It's a vast network of reporters, donors, other elected officials, operatives. It's pretty much nonstop. And I will say, yeah, he's trying to influence stories. But part of the genius of him as a politician is he genuinely enjoys it. I mean, he's calling you up to make a point or move you, but he loves this game.
I'm assuming this is a very different Andrew Cuomo than the one that we, the public, get to see at press conferences.
Yes and no. He's certainly more candid when he's off the record. That's the beauty of it. However, there is the quality, also very good, very strong in him, of being able to talk past uncomfortable questions or bend the truth. Most recently, last week, right before this story was going to press, and this happened to be an on-the-record part of my conversations with him, we were talking about his abandonment of his vow to let the millionaire's tax sunset. He had said very clearly, very definitively, in public, on the record, that if the millionaire's tax did not sunset, it would be a new tax, and he had vowed there would be no new taxes. Well, he spent about 10 minutes tying himself in elegant knots, but by the end of which I believed him, and I had to hang up the phone and say, that's not really true, what he just said. In fact, it's not true at all.
So he tries to find ways to justify himself.
Oh, most definitely.
Does he also call you wanting to find out what you're thinking?
Sure. He's trolling for information all across the state and country.
And do conversations start off with, this is off the record, or this is on the record?
Typically, there's a this is off the record. If not, there will come a point at which he wants to say something that he certainly doesn't want to become public, where he'll emphasize that.
I don't know if you're aware of this, but he surprised the editors and staff of a little newspaper in the Adirondacks near where he vacations when he dropped by one morning unannounced this past summer. And he hung out for the day. I can't imagine George Pataki, who also has a place up there, ever doing something like that.
Right. No, Andrew can be highly charming and has worked at his people skills. He's still more intimidating than friendly, I would say, certainly in a professional context.
Well, he also has to be aware of his father's legacy. How much is he aware of the shadow of his father?
How many hours are there in a day? Completely. And, you know, he's both playing against it and trying to beat it at every turn. He brings his father up in speeches, unsolicited, in interviews. I remember a day or two after Hurricane Sandy, I was in the governor's office on 3rd Avenue in Midtown, and he was talking about serving in the Clinton administration at HUD and dealing with FEMA and major disasters. And then this veered into an almost related but not quite explanation of his father's contending with natural disasters and how Andrews had more in, you know, 2.5 years in office than Mario had in 12.
Well, he was there for all of the disasters. He was involved in his father's governorship, wasn't he?
At the beginning, yes, certainly getting him elected the first time, the first reelection campaign. But by that point—
That was the Koch campaign?
The Koch campaign was the first one, sure. And then the reelection, I'm spacing out on who Mario beat the first time. But yeah, by midway through Mario's first term, Andrew had gone off to start HELP, the housing group. And then a couple of years down the road, went to Washington to work for Bill Clinton.
Well, Mario was called the Hamlet on the Hudson. What would Andrew be called at this point?
Yeah, I should have worked in some Shakespearean right. reference, though Machiavelli, not Shakespeare, is a good one. Machiavelli on the Hudson, not quite the same ring to it. But yes, Andrew, in reaction to his father, and simply because they're very different men in very different times, is burning to, his word is, operationalize, you know, to prove himself a man of substance and action and play every political angle.
He loves words like operationalize and also calibrate.
Yeah.
Operationalize, you know, many of my listeners who are serious about grammar will be wincing to even hear that our governor uses words like that.
Yeah, it's an interesting locution. Calibrate is by far his favorite word, and a very deft, if unintentional, description of how he approaches issues. He is very sensitive to what the political traffic will bear at any particular moment, you know, what he can get through the legislature, which personalities he needs to push and which he needs to stroke. You know, things that have become big triumphs for him or wins in policy, you know, most recently like minimum wage legislation, increasing the minimum wage in New York State. That had been in the works for many years. And there were structures a year or so ago. He could have probably gotten the votes together to make that happen a year sooner. But he would have extended more political capital than he wanted to. He waits. This year he gets a much more amenable picture.
Same thing with same-sex marriage. David Paterson promised that a law would be passed while he was governor, and he couldn't pull it. He couldn't get it through, and
right.
Andrew Cuomo did.
Right. To Paterson's credit, he tried to make it happen. And what you find with Andrew Cuomo is he won't do things either to make a point, a philosophical or ideological point, or if the outcome is uncertain. You know, the current and open-ended example is fracking. You know, he can't figure out how that's going to be a political win for him, and so he's deferring it maybe forever.
Well, the name Machiavelli has negative connotations. You have to be aware of that.
Certainly.
When you call him Machiavellian, are you saying there's a good side and a bad side to the way he works the political arena?
No question. I didn't write the headline. I won't take responsibility completely
for that.
But you
do compare him also to LBJ. And LBJ,
correct.
If you read Robert Caro's books, he has a mixed legacy, but he was brilliant at getting people to go along with legislation that they would normally have voted against.
Correct. And whether LBJ or Machiavelli, I'm not, you know, I'm part of this in some ways as a political columnist, and I would not use either of those comparisons completely pejoratively. I mean, Cuomo's been enormously successful. Some of the tactics he uses are a little scary or costly, and those things are starting to build up. You know, you were referencing him showing up at an Adirondacks newsroom over the summer. You know, a more frightening episode involving a small Adirondacks newspaper was a couple of months ago. One of Cuomo's top aides ripped this obscure state transportation worker, read his disciplinary record on a radio show in Albany because there had been a small story in this Adirondacks newspaper, which
maybe the same one.
Yeah, which, you know, 2,000 people read probably. But this transit worker had made the mistake of speaking to the paper without clearing it in Albany. So that, you know, was a major offense in the Cuomo universe. They dispute that. They say he, you know, has this disciplinary record and shouldn't have been talking about it, things out of his league. But that has a chilling effect, certainly. You know, they keep track of who talks to which media when. Nobody's talking out of turn anytime recently.
It's the Adirondack Daily Enterprise out of Saranac.
Ah, there we
That's
go.
That's the one that I was referring to.
Good.
I don't know if it's the same one. Think about LBJ. He convinced some Southern legislators, people in Congress, to vote against to vote for legislation that they knew was going to cause them trouble during the next election. And Andrew Cuomo did the same thing with a number of people as far as same-sex marriage is concerned, and a few of them lost their seats.
Correct. And, you know, magazines, we're writing headlines, we're trying to sell magazines. I don't want to suggest that what Andrew Cuomo has accomplished so far, while important, rises to the level of what LBJ did in civil rights legislation.
But what happened when they said, you know, I'm going to lose the next election, the Tea Party is going to send somebody up against me, what did he say to them?
He said, I'm going to back you up. You know, I have the popularity in the polls. I can steer you, you know, the on-the-ground kind of turnout help that will keep you in office. And he appealed, you know, to their sense of pride or history that even if you were to lose this race, you would have done something for the greater good. And that's powerful for a lot of people.
And I'm assuming as they sit in their homes now thinking about how they lost that election, they remember that and think of him fondly.
Exactly. And may also be, you know, secretly grateful that they don't have to spend much time in the legislature anymore.
My guest is Chris Smith of New York Magazine. He's a contributing editor, and his article, The Albany Machiavelli, is in this week's issue. We will continue our conversation after we take a little break. Stay with us. We are back with Chris Smith, who is a contributing editor at New York Magazine, and his cover story in this week's issue is called The Albany Machiavelli, talking about Andrew Cuomo. How did he get the Senate to pass his gun control package, which is one of the toughest in the nation, just a couple of hours after the bill was circulated?
Right. Well, as we all unfortunately know, there was the Newtown shooting tragedy.
Yeah, well, that hasn't helped others get their gun bills through.
Correct. He again proved he's better than most at this. And he immediately seized the opportunity, tried to get legislatures to come back from their end-of-the-year holidays, and threatened to destroy the very fragile ruling coalition in the New York State Senate if they didn't play along. I'll spare all the gory details, but there's currently this deal between state Senate Republicans and a handful of Senate Democrats to be leading the state Senate on alternate turns. A lot of the way that came to be depended on Andrew Cuomo, and he said he could essentially, you know, withdraw that support and knock them out of leadership if they didn't play along on guns. Part of the context, too, is that Republicans in the state legislature are very much an endangered species. And part of what Cuomo manipulated to get gay marriage passed, you know, a year previous to that, was exploiting the Republican state legislature fear of being redistricted out of existence. And Cuomo essentially got them to go along on gay marriage and on pension reform by playing along with a more favorable redistricting plan. So that not the redistricting so much as this notion that they're very, very vulnerable on the Republican side. He was threatening to beat them up with an ad campaign over guns that could have risked more seats this time around.
Well, you quote him as saying, if I support Democrats and Republicans have the majority, I get nothing done. But is he in danger of antagonizing members of his own party?
He already has, certainly, yeah, particularly the more liberal members of the state Senate, the Democrats, who he essentially bypassed to help create this leadership structure. They have nowhere else to go, and he knows that. But that's the kind of thing that in the long term can build up some scars for him to make other things harder to get done.
Well, we're seeing the same thing in Washington with President Obama. Because there are liberals in Congress who are upset with some of the things that he's done, probably to gain a similar end, although Andrew Cuomo seems to be more successful, maybe because the Republicans in Albany are more willing to play the game.
Yes, and not to slight, you know, the hundreds of members of the Assembly and the Senate, but as the recent corruption episodes have demonstrated—
That was almost a bipartisan thing as well.
Yeah, I guess that's a positive. But the quality of who Andrew Cuomo as governor is dealing with is not exactly world class.
Well, how did he come up with that number of 7 bullets in a clip, which doesn't satisfy anyone?
It's oversimplifying to say he kind of split the difference, but that's pretty much how it happened. The existing limit was 10 bullets. There was a push by state assembly members to go half, to make it 5. And, you know, so they compromised essentially on 7, even though that no such thing physically exists, and they've had to backpedal now somewhat.
Because it's unfeasible to have 7.
Correct. So it's now this hybrid of where you're legally able to buy 10, but you're only supposed to have 7 in the physical object, and that will be unworkable too.
Well, one of the things that he does seem to have been able to pull off that none of his predecessors were is getting the budgets done on time. How has he done that?
Right. Well, he's started sooner, and he's been very attentive to identifying the needs of the important parties and swapping them. This time around, you know, he knew that the Assembly was very much interested in increasing the minimum wage. He knew that the Republicans were very much interested in tax breaks for businesses. He himself, Cuomo, wanted to get his economic development money preserved in the budget. So by, you know, nipping and tucking and swapping some of those 3 things, he essentially gave everybody a little of what they needed.
Is he a glad-hander like LBJ? One of the criticisms of Barack Obama, especially if you read Maureen Dowd, is that he's kind of reserved and cool, and he doesn't socialize in the way that somebody like LBJ would have.
Yeah, it's somewhere in between. He socializes to the extent that he'll have people over to the mansion in Albany, but he's not out, you know, in restaurants or in the homes of legislatures. You know, he'll do fundraising events and things like that. And glad-handing to me suggests, in some ways, someone who's looking for the approval, you know, has a need for the approval of other people. And Cuomo's, as a personality, not that way.
What are the hazards that face him in the near future? There's the casino gambling problem.
Right, which the corruption scandals in the legislature strengthen his leverage there. He's said that he wants the siting and the legalization to be decided by an independent commission.
But he tried to force a casino on New York in the old, what was it, aqueduct facility,
right,
which really seemed weird and sounded almost a little corrupt in the way that it was structured.
It did, and he quickly backed off and claims he doesn't want to do that kind of thing again. But he's, you know, able to use it as a cudgel or a tool. You know, he's threatening the Indian tribes up near Buffalo that he's going to put a rival casino in their backyard if they don't come around on cigarette taxes.
Now, fracking is probably the biggest problem he's facing right now.
Sure. There's enormous pressure upstate, particularly in Republican districts, you know, for jobs. There are a lot of towns and regions, cities hurting on the verge of insolvency. But there's a very active environmental, democratic, left constituency that Cuomo needs, you know, that hates it. And the public polls are kind of split down the middle. So he claims, the governor claims, that he's leaving it totally in the hands of the state health commissioner. But nobody in Albany believes that.
I thought it was revealing that he admitted, "I don't have the knowledge," when he was asked about that. But when polls don't point one particular way to go, isn't that time for a governor to lead?
Exactly the question I asked him. And he went into what's one of his standard sort of rhetorical tropes about it's really the people who lead the politicians and, you know, I need to go out and listen to what they're saying. And right now they're totally split.
On the one hand, he's made shutting down Indian Point a top priority, but here he is vamping for time on the politically radioactive fracking industry. Does he have a coherent energy strategy?
No, not really. That's part of, you know, the up and downside, that what's expedient and what seems to work in the moment is more often than not the path he's going to follow. He's a, you know, generally progressive cultural guy, but on economic issues, it's what will work, basically.
After Sandy, unlike New Jersey Governor Chris Christie, Governor Cuomo freely embraced the global warming imperative. Do you think that by 2016 that will be an issue with real traction, the way immigration is today or the economy?
I hope so.
Because he's thinking of running, isn't he?
Oh, God, yes. I hope it has real currency and traction. Unfortunately, the way things work, it'll take more disasters. 2016, his big impediment is Hillary Clinton, as it is for most Democrats who want to be president.
He also says that his father's great 1984 convention speech was a mistake.
I find that fascinating. It's something that, if he's talking to me still, I don't know. I would love to explore at greater length. Yes, because Andrew Cuomo felt that by giving that speech, Mario Cuomo made himself, you know, a star on the national stage, and that it disrupted his relationship with people in New York State, and that it hamstrung him as a governor in getting things done here.
And unlike his father, he seems to want to run for president. But we can't go into it any further because we've run out of time. My great thanks to Chris Smith of New York Magazine, the article, The Albany Machiavelli, cover story in this week's issue.